welcome to Label Sessions Presents, the podcast where we talk to the most interesting people about all the things you need to know in the world of innovation, business, design, tech, and culture. I'm Fazlan Iso, and today we're joined by three brand new additions to the Label Sessions expert roster, as well as Nick Sherrard from the Label Sessions team. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
So hello and welcome to Richard Elwood, who is the strategist who makes brands mean something. Richard doesn't just craft stories, he makes them land. Whether launching in 23 markets or driving retail footfall with multi-sensory campaigns, he connects brand business impact. Welcome, Richard.
Hi there. Thank you very much for having me today.
Awesome. A big welcome to Sachin Shah, the strategic CTO who builds tech that doesn't break the business. Sachin scales from zero with clarity, aligning product, platform, and people at speed. He's the rare CTO who knows when to move fast and when to build forever. Welcome, Sachin.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And then a big welcome to Alison Kilduff, the culture coach who doesn't blink when it gets hard. Alison brings clarity and calm to the messiest corners of organizational life, cutting through conflict, stagnation, and fog to help teams actually change. Welcome, Alison.
Thank you, Fazlan. Lovely introduction.
Thank you. So on to our first topic. And interestingly enough, it's about AI. So as a leader today, how many things do you really need to think about when you choose which AI tools use? In some parts of the world, corporations are being asked to use sovereign AI. Around the world, corporations are in regulated industries are choosing a partner, then finding out that an update to an LLM causes them big challenges. As a leader today, how can you create an AI strategy that factors in so many different challenges?
I mean, especially as a CTO, that's kind of the right and center of my mind. And there are plenty of topics that comes in, and none of them are, I mean, some of them are new, not many of them are the issues we have with any other technologies around security, training, model assurance, ability to support when things break, especially now that LLM is in the space of writing code. There's a lot of noise around application build from 0 to 10 in hours instead of weeks and months. And sovereignty has been the biggest topic more recently with all the geopolitical issues that are going on as well. More recently, UK Ministry of Defence have just recently signed a £4 million contract with Google Cloud to build a UK sovereign cloud. So that kind of shows the importance of sovereign cloud and AI that is increasing in the world. Now, not all of these topics are equally equal weight across startup or corporate. Some of them would have more weight than the other, depending on the phase of the company. But I would say data security is the most important one that kind of comes up to the mind anytime anyone starts to use the AI tools, or and it's so much easily accessible to the customers as well.
So this is not a specialist subject of mine, but I have been involved. I mean, mainly I've been involved in IT implementations that haven't landed. I did a lot of work in my early career in the public sector, a lot in the NHS, who have spent billions on communication and tech systems to piece together the different parts of the system, and they have all summarily failed. And I think leadership is a large part of why they failed. And I don't know whether we're going to see similar things with AI and large language models, but I think too many leaders abdicate responsibility for organizational choices to the, I mean, perhaps not to their CTOs within their organization, but definitely in provider organizations. They don't know enough themselves about the technology and they're slightly mystified by it. And we continue to believe that tech will do everything too quickly, and we don't road test. And I think one of the things that I saw fail very badly in the public sector is that internal experts weren't listened to. I was talking to in fact, I'd never met one before, a CPO/CTO. It's normally the other way around, actually, isn't it? But they had just done a massive EPR implementation. It was a manufacturing organization, and it landed on time, in budget. Everybody got paid something as a result of that. And I think that is a real test of leadership. Like, you know your business, you work with your partners, you work with your internal partners. You don't abdicate your decisions. And if you don't know enough, you need to find out and not land it on your organization without testing it.
Yeah, first of all, I'd say from a marketing perspective, I think the opportunities for AI are incredibly exciting. And particularly if you're looking at efficiency, innovation, quality, brilliant. But I think to Alison's point, you've got to make sure you're looking at the tools and saying, well, what is the problem we're working to solve? And then actually, is there a role for AI? And if there is, great, what is that role? But as you look around at this myriad of different AI tools, I saw one, Faceless Empire. AI will create the script, AI will then conduct the voiceover, and the only human intervention is going to be uploading that content. So none of that, from a creativity perspective, really screams the sort of Dylan Thomas literary anguish of creating something. So I think from a marketing perspective, it's going to be this perennial question of authenticity and how are you making sure that you're not blindsided by platforms or technology for their sake.
It's beautiful to build that point, Rich, as well, which is there's a, in marketing in particular, there's one of those areas where the more that AI makes it easier to generate content, the less powerful content itself becomes. Because if everybody can kind of look pretty similar, then actually just throwing more content like that out there becomes less powerful itself. There's an interesting kind of feedback loop in terms of the way that the tools being adopted changes the way you have to use them or the way you have to think about what they produce.
It's true. And I think generating a huge amount of content and even some of the imagery is fantastic. And, you know, some of the things I can do in 10 seconds now on my phone, rather than having to wait, you know, weeks and weeks working with different designers, it's absolutely fantastic. And that can then motivate and inspire all sorts of different campaigns and marketing activations. Great. But for sure, you still need to have that very, very clear, authentic storytelling, which is going to resonate with your audience. Otherwise, it's going to be very, very clear quickly that this is an authentic, genuine, emotional storytelling.
I think it raises an important question about like both like the trust and the customer value, in the sense that there's so much noise about X is being done in a matter of minutes, etc. There's so much pressure from like the leaders and the CEOs that we need to do AI, but what we don't know. And in that case, you kind of need to trust your wider leadership team to what is possible. But and on the other side, as Richard said, it's more about trying to solve the customer solution, customer problem, rather than trying to just impose AI for the sake of it is very important, given the noise.
Do you think it's actually kind of an interesting point right now where we are as well? Because I find there's a lot of enterprises which have maybe now got an AI strategy on paper that factors in some of the things you're talking around, like data security, make some choices in terms of which ecosystems they want to play in. But in those very same companies, you then speak to other people in different teams. Quite often it is the marketing team somewhere that might have a group of people who are the early adopters and are already pushing this. And in practice, they're using all kinds of different tools. There's this kind of odd moment where we've kind of got, to some level, I think companies are getting a bit more comfortable that they've got some level of governance around it. But in practice, you've got then different pockets of user groups that are on their own laptops, putting lots of sensitive data into different tools in different ways. There's a real moment of chaos. And I kind of feel like we're almost like pending to see a couple of scary examples of that coming out right now, where people start to say, well, actually, we had this policy, but there's a whole group of people who had a different personal policy they were following, and there's going to be results of that.
Yeah, it makes the CTO and CIO's job much difficult in terms of what I refer to as a cottage industries kind of spurs everywhere in terms of the data, especially in the large corporate, it becomes difficult to kind of keep track of. So the individual leads of the groups needs to be more responsible as to what's going on in their area and make sure that the data privacy and data security is top of their mind. It definitely is. And some areas are easier to kind of achieve quote-unquote AI on, whereas some areas are not so, because if you don't have a a good data foundation, AI is not going to automatically solve that issue. So if you don't have the AI, the data, underlying data available, especially in the enterprise SaaS sort of solutions, if the data foundations are not strong, AI is still going to struggle, or worst case, it will give you wrong answers or wrong predictions.
Yeah, that's the big leadership test, actually. It was interesting before we were talking about the NHS systems, Alison. It's interesting, like, in terms of the, all of this is underpinned by getting the data in enterprise sorted out. Nobody ever wants to do that because it's really unglamorous. It's really hard. It comes with a bill. This is a really interesting thing where lots of C-suite leaders right now want to do the AI thing, but they don't want to do the thing that would enable it to work. That's
a really good point. I think also your point, Nick, as well, around the governance piece. I guess there is a whole education piece, isn't there, around, because, you know, particularly, well, all of us have traded a massive amount of kind of security and confidentiality in terms of what we're going to get in the next click. And I know that I've been involved in coaching circles for organizations where we do themes, because obviously the coaching is entirely confidential, but we pull together themes, and coaches are off going, oh, well, I've just got this new large language program that does all these but actually that data is out. It's kind of like, look, that's actually out. You've already breached your, so I think there is, that's not to be the kind of old fogey that goes, look, we all need to be careful, but I just think we have, this stuff is so sparkly and shiny that we forget the consequences, A, of poor data on the one hand to move forward, but also kind of people on their laptops just putting stuff that actually is very valuable and is almost impossible. I mean, I don't know how boards are going to govern this big shiny thing. I think it's a really, it's the kind of, again, the unsexy bit of it, but that kind of probably keeping a few people awake at night.
There are some efforts in terms of, I was listening to a co-founder of Anthropic, and they are kind of engaged on more responsible AI and trying to make not repeat the downside of the social media and the kind of mind. The psychological effect of the social media that had. So one of the initiatives that was being talked about was the LLM assurance. How do you assure that the LLMs are producing the results which are not harmful or not biased, etc.? And there's a need for making sure that these big companies who are making progresses LLM, they have the guardrails from external companies doing the assurance of right thing is being done while training the model. And there's an opportunity, but at the same time, is the speed at which this technology is growing, makes it difficult. But so was the social media. The speed at which it was growing was difficult to protect, create the guardrails around it.
You wonder as well, you know, I think in terms of guardrails, I just think in practice, there's so many different tools now that I can see, and the kind of startup culture, lots of companies can adopt them. Coaches might have their own versions and such like. But the only way I can see it going in big companies is they're just going to lock down to one of the big ecosystems. They're going to choose Microsoft or Google. In certain parts of the world, they might go for Alibaba Cloud or something like that. But they're going to choose an ecosystem, and the big ones are going to win quite quickly, it seems to be, in enterprise anyway. I can't see how enterprise can be in a situation where you're somehow having to validate 30 different tools. As you were saying before, Session, lots of these are issues that IT has faced into before, and the pattern they go to is locking down to one or two key partners. I think that has to be the case. If that is the case, though, there's a hell of a lot of money gone into AI enterprise applications that's going to find it quite difficult unless they exit quite quickly. It seems to me that it's a real pinch point. It comes through, like just because there's so many different tools coming out, even if your tool is absolutely the right application for a particular type of the marketing tech stack, Richard, or something. I just can't see how an enterprise IT team can allow that to be the solution. They're going to have to adopt one of the big players and say that's our partner.